Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Previously, Got TV Podcast Network.
You'll love them and they'll love you, and it'll be this big, huge, nauseating love fest.
Everybody, this is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 7, Episode 24, Spring Breakdown. And now, here are your hosts, Tari Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Oh, hello.
Oh, hello.
First, a correction. I said in the last episode that it aired in April. It, in fact, aired in March. I apologize to everybody. No one cares. Like, everyone. Anyway, I feel like it's important to get facts on the record when I was shitting on
them. Don't be such a squeef.
Well, all right, let's begin with our C plot. Val gets jealous of Rob's fame beard. So Rob wants to stay in bed all day, but Val puts him off his hooky playing plans. And when Alan calls to confirm that she got Rob to agree to go to whatever party they have that night, she snaps that he knows she did. And when she gets up and starts getting dressed, Rob asks where she's going. She says the party, but he doesn't want to hang out with a bunch of fake people kissing his ass. She says everyone will be gushing about his movie, and also she promised Alan. And she then coos that he made a great movie and it's worth plastering on a smile to do a few interviews for the sake of selling it. They have this exchange in clip 2.
I never know what to say in those interviews.
Well, then we got a lot of preparing to do.
Crack the whip any harder, I swear you own a piece of me, too.
Take that back. I'm not Alan.
Hey, I know you're not.
I care about you.
I care about you, too. I'm sorry.
The only thing that makes this work is Rob is not going to remember this later, that they even had this exchange, or that he like presciently made this accusation, because he's so pretty, but so dumb.
Yeah, very dumb. Also, since when does the talent have a choice about going to these parties? They don't. Shut up, Rob.
No, they don't. So a limo later comes to pick up Rob and Val in their so dated pants and leather jacket ensembles. Like, nothing all in weeks has dated the show more than that. That's what they're wearing to a party at a club at for an industry event.
Yeah. Which also appears to be taking place at 11 in the morning, and you could see that in the visual.
Well, aids. I was going to get to that. Yes. There are pictures in the visual aids where you can see, like, it's bright, bright light out at this cool party at a club. Anyway, we'll get to it. Alan pops out. Neither Rob nor Val is happy to see him. And he also has a surprise. Rob's date, Heather Dixon, who's also very dated in her bias cut satin and looked to me like a busted Elizabeth Berkley. You can see her in the visual.
Absolutely. Aid. And there's a reason that she barely has lines in this episode. And it's because she has the kind of teeth that would have been fixed even in her hometown of Wichita long before she got on the bus. Yeah. Like, this it's basic? True. No.
Right. And they also had to cast someone who was like an even worse actor than what's his actual name?
Jason Lewis.
Who's again very good looking at this point, not good at his craft.
Yeah, no. Very nice man, definitely improved, but at this point it's roof stoof.
It's exactly what I was going to say.
I know.
Alan cheerfully says that everyone in town is after Heather, so she and Rob are going to make quite an impression at the party. Rob says he's going with Val. Alan says it's fine and leaves the decision up to Val, who knows how important this is and also wants her check. So sadly, Val says it's fine. Business is business. She'll see Rob there. But of course, Val schemes. While Rob is getting interviewed, Val pulls Heather away to meet a director named Kevin Crowe, because I guess they could clear the name Quentin Tarantino 2 weeks ago, but not Cameron Crowe. Who knows?
I just assumed it was Cameron. Whatever. And she bonked the line.
Oh, that could be. Could be. Val walks Heather outside into the bright, bright sunlight you always see surrounding a cool Hollywood party at a club, puts Heather in a limo and pays the driver to go get stuck in traffic. And when we see Alan next, he's weirdly drumming on his chest, which you can see because I made a GIF, the visual aids, when Val comes over for a fight in clip three.
So, where's Heather?
On our way back to the party?
I don't think so.
We had a deal.
Yeah, and the word floozy wasn't in it. Not even in fine print.
I have made you a great deal of money recently.
And from where I sit, I think I'm the breadwinner of this couple.
He's my client. I call the shots.
Oh, really? Well, Alan, let's review, okay? You wanted Rob to do the movie, and you needed me to get him to do it. You wanted Rob to come to the party, and you needed me to get him to come. You may get the 10%, but I call the shots.
We'll see. I mean, I guess she does end up being right.
Will.
But, anyway, Rob comes over after Alan has stomped off to see if everything's all right. And Val calmly says that Alan was confused about a few things, so she straightened him out, which I love that phrasing. Rob is sorry about what happened with Heather, and Val tells him not to worry and shoots Alan a look of triumph. And later, Rob and Val find Alan at the bar, where Rob says Alan owes Val an apology, and Alan is happy to offer one, sort of, in clip four.
I'm sorry, I was a snake. But at least you can see me slithering across the room. This one, she'll cut your heart out and make you think she's doing you a favor.
Well, coming from someone who's in the movie business, I guess I'll take that as a compliment. Come on.
I paid her 10 grand last week to help me convince you to do your next picture.
What are you saying? What's he talking about?
Well, he paid me to get you to do that movie you hated. But you and I both know that you're not gonna do it.
Took money. Why didn't you tell me?
Well, I was going to, but I just wanted to make sure that you knew what a sleazebag manager you have, and after today, I think you do.
Oh, that's priceless.
Who else but a sleaze would use you to launch some bimbo's career, huh?
That is a lie, all right? It was for your career, too. Come on, Rob, you understand.
Sure I do. You're fired.
What? Come on, you know what kind of girl this is.
Making somebody else look bad doesn't make you look good.
Yeah, well, think again, kid, because you need me a hell of a lot more than I need you.
No, I don't.
I've got my wood.
Listen, let me explain, okay? I want to tell you why I did it.
I'm sure you do.
Notice that at no point does she say that she is going to tear up the check, because Val...
Oh, no, she's already cashed it, I'm sure, and bought like 7 pairs of leather pants and a tennis bracelet for her other wrist.
Yeah.
Callback. The next day, Val shows up at Rob's with a rose, to which he says she has to do better than that, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, true.
She says sorry, like literally just sorry, and promises it will never happen again. Like, what it is she referring to exactly? Not clarified. Rob says he trusted her, and she says she never violated that trust. She always had his best interests at heart. He would really like to think that. She says Alan is a jerk who's only looking out for himself. She only took the money to show Rob what kind of guy he is. So as Sarah said, like, in my notes, now she's going to give it back or to charity, JK. And Rob's brilliant idea after all this is that Val should be his manager. Oh. Like, Rob, way to take exactly the wrong lesson from this whole debacle. Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
He's such a dummy. And she says she doesn't know anything about the movie industry, nor does she want to mix business with pleasure. But he doesn't really seem to care about his career at all. And it's just like, nah, do it. And under his total lack of pressure, she agrees. Let's see how this goes. Probably bad for Rob.
Awesomely, I'm sure. And now.
Oh, yeah. She's somehow fallen ass backward into running this club when she's a college senior. So, yeah, she's totally qualified. Cough. On to our B plot. Dr. Martin's stroke inconveniences Felice. Well, it does. At the hospital. Donna exposits that Dr. Martin's coming home. He's still not 100%, but his doctors say his recovery is first class, and he certainly looks better skin tone wise. but he still can't use his right arm and leg. Donna brightsides that he has partial use and that the doctors are confident he'll regain mobility with physical therapy and be good as news. It's new. This is news to Dr. Martin, but Donna says the doctor just said it 10 minutes ago. Dr. Martin's short-term memory will come back too. This is also not something that comes up again. So I don't know if they're setting that up for like future episodes, because it's not an issue in this one really, except
yeah,
for this one
I don't
scene.
Know.
Whatever. They had a stroke consultant on the set and they wanted to use every bit of information they could get out of him or her, I guess.
Obviously. Yeah.
So in the hall, Dr. Martin's doctor is briefing Felice about a rehab facility Dr. Martin's apparently going to, which is the best in the city, of course. And this is the first that Don has heard about a rehab facility. Felice says they don't want to rush him. Donna presses Felice about the doctor saying Dr. Martin could go home with them if they got a home aide, but Felice declares that he's not ready to come home. And Donna keeps arguing about it in, this is setting up what her main thread is going to be through this episode, which is she's acting like in any way it's her place to overrule his wife, which infuriates me the whole way through. But Felice stands firm, saying that Dr. Martin is not ready to come home in clip 5.
How could you do this to him?
I'm doing this for him. And this is a wonderful care facility.
He belongs at home.
They can provide all the support services that your father really needs right now.
Now, what he needs right now is our love and affection.
Yes, and he'll get that. And more. Donna, don't make this any harder than it already is.
I mean, my jokey headline aside for the storyline, like, of course this is hard on Felice, and she's not just trying to, like, fob him off on other people. And Donna, like, mind your fucking business. This is not up to you.
Well, and these places exist for a reason.
Right.
One's spouse is not qualified to provide ancillary medical care, period. He's better off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like, partially paralyzed. Like, does Donna think that her mother is in, you know, this woman who's in her at least 50s is even physically capable to, like, pick him up? Because I don't think she is.
Well, and no, she's not, because she's not trained to do stuff like that. And you shouldn't put that right in the relationship, in my opinion. But what the fuck does Donna know about it? Nothing. She's just an angel on earth who has to make it out like this is because Felice doesn't love Dr. Martin, when it's because she does, but whatever. We still have to endure this bratting for like a week.
Well, let's get to it so we can get through it. At the Peach Pit, David and Donna try to understand her father's journey of recovery by looking through a lot of pamphlets about stroke. That'll do it. David is on Donna's side, but where Dr. Martin should be living right now is a big decision, he says. And Donna replies like the baby she is in clip 6.
You know, when I was little, whenever I got sick, my mom, she would run straight to the medicine cabinet. And at my dad, he always said that no pill worked as well as a little TLC. And then he'd pick me up and he'd put me on my bed, and he had these little prisms that he'd hang in my window. And he said they'd take me over the rainbow to the land of candy and chocolate. And I always felt better in my own room. So will he.
There's no use arguing with you, is there?
Not when I'm right.
Okay, he doesn't have the flu. He does not have the flu. He had a stroke. This is not the same.
I also, I don't know. If you have a fever, do you want like weird flashing things in your room? Shut up, Dr. Martin. Shut up, Donna.
You guys are forgetting that the land of chocolate has chocolate half off, though.
It's true.
Clarence.
Anyway, all of that. That is idiotic, but David actually comes up with a concretely useful thing he can do. When Donna goes back to the hospital, he's going to get in touch with a stroke support group and see what is up and what they don't know about what they don't know. So when Donna comes storming into David's house after another fight with her mother that we were cruelly denied the chance to see, by the way.
Yeah.
Stupid. Before she can recap it, David brings her over to show her all the assistive devices that the support group he talked to recommended. And Donna is excited to shove all this in Felice's face. I'm paraphrasing, but David says that stroke proofing the house is the least of her parents' problems. And to demonstrate, he tells her to put her left arm behind her back and then hands her an orange, telling her to peel it. And she just shrugs helplessly, like, how about you eat apples while you're recuperating? Problem solved. But anyway. He then hands her a bottle of Snapple and tells her to open it, and it evidently doesn't occur to her to clamp it between her legs, so she just hands it back, telling David they can do this stuff for her dad, and they can, in a way. I mean, they have live-in help. Shout out Lucille. I mean, not that she's a healthcare worker, but, you know,
she could
for
open
stuff
a
like
Snapple.
That, she can open a bottle. Yeah, exactly. So David starts listing more of the stuff that Donna would have to do for Dr. Martin, like tie his ties, drive his car, button his shirts. And Donna keeps insisting she can do all of it. And David says he's sure she can, but Felice doesn't want her to. And none of this will matter if Felice is against it, which is the real point. Honestly, she's his wife. But Donna says this, clip 7.
Well, maybe it's not up to her.
No, it definitely is up to her. You're not his wife. Shut the fuck up.
Well, you're going to sue Felice now for power of medical attorney over your father? No.
Right.
You're in college.
Who's only physically incapacitated. Like, he's in his right mind. Other than the short-term memory loss, he's capable of making this decision on his own.
Yeah, and already did. So fucking butt out.
I know.
Also,
God, I'm so
show
mad
writers,
again.
Nobody cares about the storyline anyway. Like, I like Dr. Martin fine, but fuck's sake.
Yeah. Anyway, David says that if Donna uses this stuff to lobby Dr. Martin and Felice finds out, she will lose it, which is true. Donna knows that he's right, but she's ready to do it anyway. Her choices are to make her mom happy or do what she thinks is right for her dad. And then at the hospital, David and Donna are telling Dr. Martin about all the adaptive gear they've just heard about to sell him on coming home instead of to the rehab center. But after a deep breath, Dr. Martin tells Donna he's not going home. He told Felice he'd go to rehab. And Donna urges him to consider the alternative, as if this adult cardiologist would not have given serious thought to his medical care and who is providing it. And he says he's made up his mind to go to the facility. And Donna tearfully says that's Felice talking, but Dr. Martin says he and Felice agree, and they have this exchange in clip 8.
Do you, Daddy?
Yes.
Because if you don't, you should say so. This is your decision.
He made it.
Yeah, and he's not taking himself off life support, so step away. This is gross.
Yeah, maybe he just wants someone else to wipe his ass when he goes to the bathroom. Like, seriously, this is what it's down to. Like, what no one is saying is that. Like,
oh,
ties,
that's
ties.
The dream. Have somebody else wipe your ass after you go to the bathroom. None of that mess, none of that fuss. Just poo, and then you're on with your day.
We need to have a conversation about end-of-life care, Dave. Anyway, I know he's not well, but it's not like he fell on his head. He is cogent and aware and capable of making decisions in consultation with... say it with me, his wife. But he doesn't want to burden Donna with his care. And when Donna says he's not a burden, he emphatically agrees that he's not and never intends to be. Listen to your dad, Jesus Christ. But she doesn't. Donna finds Felice sitting alone on Dr. Martin's empty hospital bed later, but he's just out getting x-rays. And Donna cheerily says he's doing so well, and Felice grits that he was doing better before Donna talked to him about coming home, which Felice specifically asked her not to do, and Donna's still a fucking idiot in clip 9.
I just wanted Daddy to know his options.
Dad, it's so easy for you to say, just bring him home. You're not the one who's going to have to feed him, to bathe him, to dress him. Your life is not going to change. Mine is.
I thought the person whose life we were concerned about here was Dad. But what difference does that make now? I mean, he's already made up his mind. Mom? Mom, you can do this.
No, I can't. He's always been the strong one.
You're scared.
Say that like it's a shock.
I've just never seen you like this before.
All my strength and attitude is come from knowing that he would always be there to pick me up if I fell.
You're not gonna fall.
But what if I do? What if I'm alone with him and something happens?
Well, you won't be alone. We'll get a nurse and I'll be there as much as I can.
Boy, you have his confidence. You always have.
You've always had mine.
I can't believe.
Dad just shit himself. What do we do now?
Lucille.
I can't believe this fucking worked. It's so wrong. Ugh.
I really...
I'm infuriated.
Well, and now she's sort of like, oh, we'll get a nurse. Like, uh-huh. Which he'd have at the rehab facility. And all of a sudden now that he's coming home, she's like, oh, I'll be there as much as I can. Like, oh, I see.
Oh, great. See you twice a week. Like, it's not like they were sending him away. Like, it was a facility in Beverly Hills. So, like, it just because you have happy memories of when he cared for you and you had the flu, like, it's not the same.
Yeah. It's also not like 90 days. It's like 2 weeks. My mother went to one after she broke the fuck out of her ankle. They taught her how to manage with it. And then they sent her home with a cane. But she needed a couple of weeks to figure it out. That's it.
Yeah.
Dumb.
So dumb. Yep. Anyway, the next day, David and Donna have just finished outfitting the house, including prisms in the window, when Felice wheels in Dr. Martin, and both of Donna's parents look touched by the prisms. They're really going to reflect like mad off of the giant fucking chain that David is wearing, by the way, which you can see in the video later.
Also, David installed the ramp.
Yeah, I'm
the
sure.
Fuck.
Yeah, those arms can't lift a hammer. Come on now. Anyway, so Dr. Martin and Felice thank David and Donna for their work. Shut up, Donna. End of storyline. I'm so mad. Speaking of mad, let's get to our A plot. Hong Kong Phooey. Sorry, I had to. Getting ready to leave for the airport, Tracy can't help checking for apparently the 50th time to make sure that Brandon's parents know who she is and that she's coming. And I guess I can't blame her under the circs. Brandon asks Val to reassure Tracy that it'll be okay. And Val promises, as we heard up top, that Jim and Cindy give parenting a good name and it'll be great. We'll see. Elsewhere, Kelly is bravely trying to sublimate her pain by restoring a chair in the dark. Clip 10.
We give up on things way too quickly. Beautiful things.
I know it hurts. Brandon taking Tracy to Hong Kong.
I think I can save this.
But moping is not going to turn the plane around.
Make it what it was before.
Fuck off.
Literally the only reason
chair.
They have her doing this instead of like some other craft is so that she can wear a bunch of enveloping clothing. That's the only reason.
And stand behind something that like kind of causes optical illusions.
Yeah, it
about
doesn't work.
Figure.
Moving on.
No, it doesn't. Claire begs Kelly to go to the Peach Pit after dark with her, but Kelly refuses, forcing Claire to say that some things aren't worth saving. And when she's gone, Kelly takes the opportunity of this moment of privacy to fondle her ring, of course. After 10 minutes of what seems like late 70s Hong Kong B-roll, Jim is bringing Tracy and Brandon back to his apartment. Tracy's ready to start sightseeing immediately, but Jim points out that it's only 7 a.m. and maybe they should chill for a second. And the first thing Brandon does, of course, is flop onto the light beige couch with his filthy plane shoes still on. This is where it's exposited that the show could only afford one parent at a time. I mean, Cindy is in London seeing Brenda, who has mono. This is the story they came up with.
I mean, she lives with Dylan. Let her take care of it. Let him take care of her.
I know. Anyway, Tracy asks how long it's been since they've all been together, and Brandon understates that it's been a while. Yep, almost 3 seasons. Tracy goes to unpack. Standing way too close, which you can see in the visual aids, if you dare. Ooh. Jim has questions in clip 11.
Before we do clip 11, I just want to explain something to you ladies. So when you have mono, one parent takes care of you. And when you have stereo, that's when you get them.
Oh, boo.
Yeah, I know, right? Boo, Dave.
Boo, Dave.
So how come you've never told us about Tracy?
This may come as a surprise, Dad, but there are some things I like to keep to myself.
How disgustingly grown up. Next you're going to tell me that you're shaving.
I'll tell you what, I'll buy you a couple of beers later and I'll fill you in on everything.
It's good to see you.
Yeah, you too.
I mean, here's the thing. This clip is like the actors are clearly glad to be working together again, which is sort of sweet. But You don't have to be so mm-hmm. glad that you're standing close enough to feel the other one's breath.
Oh, they're like inches apart. It's bizarre.
And have this conversation when the Tracy that you never told him about isn't in the next room with the door open. Like, talk about it sooner or much later, not right now. Fucking TV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's dumb. Later, near some tea, Jim apologizes for not having come back to America ever, as far as we know.
By the way, if I can just interrupt.
Please.
I know everyone is sick of my pointing it out in the visual aids. I don't care. I'm doing it until he's off the show. The fucking Brandon picking up the cup of coffee, not by the handle thing, apparently is genetic.
Uh-huh.
At first, I thought it was because that's the kind of teacups that don't have a handle. But no, they have handles. And both Jim and Brandon pick them up by the rim. Hate. All right, I'm done.
Okay. So Brandon shakes off this apology, saying that Jim was busy. He picked up his life and moved on, and Brandon will have to do the same thing soon and hopes he does it as well as Jim has. Jim asks about Brandon's plans. This is the time, April of your senior year of college, and Brandon cracks that there are a couple of parties he's looking forward to. Jim is serious, but Brandon says he doesn't have to do anything for a couple of months. Again, also not true. And for now, just wants to hang out with Tracy and everyone else. Jim says Tracy's great and that everyone must love her, and Brandon lists everyone who does love her, forcing Jim to deduce that the one person he hasn't mentioned is Kelly. He asks how Kelly's doing, and Brandon says, fine, I guess, like he doesn't see her six times a day. Jim asks who she's seeing, which is a hilarious way of putting it that suggests she would still be dating someone within the gang, which, you know, is a reasonable assumption. And then Tracy comes out waiting to sightsee, so put a pin in that conversation. Speaking of Kelly, at the beach, she's still working away at her symbolic chair. Claire tries to comfort her by saying that she and Steve always fight when they go away, and Tracy and Brandon probably are too. Kelly claims not to be jealous, and she and Claire are inside talking about the party Kelly still doesn't want to go to, and Claire is tiptoeing around her feelings like Kelly and Brandon broke up yesterday when Steve, waiting on the deck, sits in the faded chair and breaks it spectacularly. I made a GIF that you can see in the visual aids.
Steve.
Great. Kelly is an appropriate amount of upset, like mildly, but now she has no pretext not to go to the party, so she goes to get ready. And at said party, Kelly gets to be smug as hell when Rob shows up with Heather and not Val, as we hear in clip 12.
Nice dress. Yeah, it's a lot like one Tracy took to Hong Kong.
An actual likable moment from Kelly. I loved that she was just it like, was. Yeah, you got me.
Yep. Game recognized game. Yep. Totally is what that was. Then we're treated to some brandsplaining about the history of Hong Kong. Like he knows a thing about opium trading posts. Tracy stops to look at a book, which turns out to be a fable about a prince in love with two princesses sailing back and forth between them until his ship sinks and he dies in his own indecision.
If only.
I know, God. The only thing that stands out about the scene is the hilariously sour face that Tracy makes when the vendor tells her what the story is. Like, even this actress is like, fucking this again. Anyway, at lunch, there's some superficial talk about current 1997 events in clip 13.
See, now that's the Jim Walsh I know and love. Communist takeover, no problem. Makes me embarrassed to worry about life after college.
I mean, the only reason you should be embarrassed is you've got nothing to sweat about. You've got tons of options.
Having options and actually choosing between them are two entirely different things. So, Papa Walsh, I've come 7,100 miles for a little wisdom. You better make it good.
Don't ask what's in the bird's nest soup. And find something you love doing, the rest will fall into place.
That's it? Find something you love. Wait a minute. I came across 14 time zones in the International Dateline for that? No Confucius, no Dalai Lama, no fortune cookie, no nothing, that's it?
Well, I think everything falls into place after you find someone you love.
In bed.
Okay, with the racist music cue and the obviously a Mongolian barbecue in Van Nuys set, are you kidding?
Yeah, I hate
everything about this. I really do.
Yeah. So after some B-roll of a bunch of Paps shooting the empty doors of the Peach Pit after dark, we go inside where Kelly is cozying back up to a cute dude she blew off earlier, whose name, it turns out, is Pete. He asks what changed her attitude, and she's even a bitch about this in clip 14.
Let's just say it's not enough that I'm happy. My enemies have to be miserable.
All right.
This guy.
He's like, I don't know why I'm being hate fucked, but I'll take it. Like, all right.
Seriously. Whatever is making you talk to me, I guess it's worth it. I mean, run away, Pete, but whatever. At she toasts she to broken chairs pregnant. That she's just... True. No. She toasts to broken chairs that should just stay broken, and she's hot enough for Pete to go along with this sloppy, drunk foolishness without knowing what the hell she's talking about, I guess. And later, Kelly's at the bar with Pete getting drunker when Claire comes over to try to get her to go home with her because this guy is a stranger. And Kelly says she's just flirting and he's not a stranger anymore. In Hong Kong, Jim and Brandon have sent Tracy back to the apartment in a cab so that they could drink without her. And under direct questioning from Brandon as his friend, it is specified. Ew. Jim admits that the coming communist takeover actually has him shook. And Brandon admits as Jim's friend that his worry about his post-college future is off the charts. And Jim weirdly segues from this to Brandon and Tracy and asks how much Brandon cares about her. And this is awful. Clip 15.
A little less than she cares about me.
I think you ought to tell her.
Why?
Brandon, I can see you still care about Kelly.
Dad, let's not get into that.
It's obvious.
Yeah, and yet here we all still fucking are. And there's so many... They're back to the super tight close-ups again, and Brandon's, like, shelf curl is just... It's making me homicidal, truly.
Yeah. And if you're admitting to yourself that, like, she likes me more than I like her, like, I mean, why did you bring her? Like, why are you doing this? Why don't you just break up?
And also...
If you're so oppressed by her love.
If you are going to tell her, don't tell her now. Tell her later. At home.
In a Turkish prison.
Tracy.
Anyway, this sets Brandon up to tell Jim the ring story. He doesn't want to see Brandon make a mistake, and Brandon claims he knows what he's doing. He doesn't. Back at the party, Claire is increasingly concerned about how hard Kelly is throwing herself at Pete. And they're flirting around when Kelly realizes that her chain broke and she's lost her dumb ring, and Claire and Steve see the commotion and come over to see what's up, which is when Pete decides Kelly's not hot enough after all to be this annoying and pieces out. And Steve finds the ring, and he and Claire hustle Kelly out of there. The next day, Brandon finds Tracy at the book stand and is a bitch about it in clip 16.
I negotiated a great price.
Why?
Because I couldn't afford what he was asking.
I meant the book. Why do you want it?
Fucking tone.
What is wrong with you?
Ugh.
He's just glaring at her like she did something wrong, which I guess she did by not being fucking princess baby voice. But then dump her. You never had to do any of this. Yeah. You could have just been like, nah, but no.
Right. He's had so many chances to dump her that he hasn't taken. Like, all of this is on you. Stop acting this way. Kill yourself. Anyway, he doesn't. Tracy says the book struck a chord. Brandon looks away in irritation and she looks remorseful. And this happens. Clip 17.
I thought we were past all this.
The wound's still healing. Just can't rush it.
Understood.
Tell me I'm not tying you over until someone else comes along.
You're not.
Because if I am...
You're not. Okay?
Oh, okay. Yeah, great.
Like, uh-huh.
You're not. Fuck you.
And then, sure enough, as usual, she's like, beam. Like, simpleton.
Yeah.
Go somewhere else, please. For all of our sakes.
Run away and become a communist is what I have in my notes.
Start the bombing
anyway
with Brandon and his gigantic pants. which he cannot operate the pockets of properly and always has to have his thumbs hooked in at some weird angle when he's not drinking coffee out of the wrong side of the cup because his beefy masculine fingers are too big to hold the handle because he's the best.
Brandon Walsh.
What?
Yep. Uh-huh. So back in the beach apartment, Kelly is super hungover when Steve comes in to open her blinds and see if she wants to talk. She doesn't, she says. So Steve tells her she has to give up on Brandon. He knows about the ring and doesn't get how she got it back in the first place. So she tells him, and he tells her to put it away somewhere it won't cause her pain. She says it's bad enough that Steve and Claire know about the ring, and she asks him not to tell Brandon. He promises he won't. And after she's kicked him out, she retrieves the ring and puts it in a box of keepsakes in the bottom of her closet, and we never saw it again, I wish. The end. Who this week is our MVP? Val, who's got a new job, I guess.
I'm going to go with Carol Potter, who was like, you know what? I already did one of these return engagements, and I can no longer pretend that I love this character. Bye-bye.
Fair enough. All right. Least valuable player.
Brandon.
For tone alone, but really like all of it. He's
and
just
get your fucking
worst.
Boots off the couch, twat.
It would. It really takes some shittiness for him to be worse than Donna, who I fucking hated through her whole storyline. But like his awful delivery and terrible attitude erased all of my rage. So
yeah,
thank you. And then a question mark.
Yeah.
And a user submitted challenge at Corianne on Twitter. Suggests that we list 5 ways a sex out would have improved the episode. Well, if Tracy was locked in with Brandon with no escape, she might have dumped him sooner. If Kelly was on a sex out, she couldn't have dicked around with the chair as long as she did.
True. Presumably Pete would have found someone else to hit on or be hit on by at the sex out and not have stuck his hand in the crazy that was sloppy red wine drunk Kelly. Yeah.
Yes. And Claire also, by the same token, wouldn't have probably felt concerned that Kelly was in imminent danger of being assaulted by a stranger.
And if Donna were locked up on the sex out, she couldn't have interfered with her father's care and things would have proceeded as they should have, according to the wishes of his wife.
We did it.
And we'll be doing it again soon, next time on Again With This. And they call the ill wind Mariah. That's right, Brandon's Texas trick that we never thought we'd see again visits Los Angeles and befriends Kelly, and Tracy's a bitch about it. Rob's movie sucks, and Rob's a bitch about it. Kathleen Robertson actually has to go through with an arc about her tech problems, and Claire is a bitch about it. And Donna and David buzz calibrate some kind of milestone, and we will be bitches about it because they aren't fucking, so who cares? Please care about some Pepto-Bismol before you visit our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. You can find those at our website, previously.tv. You can follow that website on Twitter at previouslytv and this podcast on Twitter at AWT90210. I'm excessively convenient fable Sarah D. Bunting. I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is symbolic rocker Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is time zone hopper David T. Cole. He's on Twitter at Clark. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoonie.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv podcast network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.